the people, the companies responsible for this is all the companies, all the states that promote agro-industrial systems where farmers have to produce at lower cost. And lower cost means bigger farms, use of pesticides, use of fertilizers.
In the past months, farmers have been protesting all over Europe. They are marching and driving tractors through city streets. But sadly, what's happening follows a pattern we see often. A serious protest, born out of real struggles, is being made to seem less important. It's being turned into a fight between farmers and environmentalists, or farmers and the European Union. And some people are using it for their own gain, like trying to win votes or protect their own interests. Locale.
Local.
Shock.
Local.
Cambiamento.
Tahir.
Jirgelekte.
Sakula Ijaya.
Food.
Change.
Welcome to the Slow Food Youth Network podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to Slow Food, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the beauty and complexity of good, clean and fair food systems. I'm Valentina Gritti, I'm your host and a Slow Food Youth Network activist. On this podcast, we meet changemakers around the world who are working towards a more sustainable food system and promote a slow lifestyle. This episode is part of the series Slow Food Goes Brussels, where we dissect the political debates linked to the greatest challenges food and agriculture are facing. Today, we'll talk about why farmers are protesting, with a focus on common grounds and on solving the root problems in our food system. So, how did it get to this situation? First of all, it's essential to get an overview of European policy around food and agriculture. For this, I contacted Jeroen Kandel. Jeroen is an associate professor of food and agricultural policy at Wageningen University in the Netherlands.
And I very quickly became very fascinated with the food system because it really relates to some of the biggest challenges of our time. If you're aware that about a third of European greenhouse gas emissions originates from the food system, if you're aware that the food system is the biggest driver of biodiversity loss, and that there's still billions of people suffering from food insecurity, that an increasing number of people suffer from diet-related disease. It really shows that a lot comes together in the functioning of our food systems. That's why I've personally found it very fascinating to study how we can improve the food system.
In Europe, the biggest fund that goes to agriculture is the Common Agricultural Policy. Let's ask Jeroen to outline for us in a few simple concepts what is the CAP.
So if we look at food policy in Europe, we really see that different elements of food policy are with different levels of government. So if we look at the EU level, the EU has very strong competencies on agriculture and on food safety, but not so much on the consumption side, for example, or on food education. That's largely with the national governments. So the Common Agriculture Policy, so the EU's agriculture policy, has been part of the European integration project since the start of the European community in 1957. And it started off as a policy that that helped to protect the European agricultural market, that introduced minimum prices to farmers to incentivize them to scale up their production, to become more productive, to invest in mechanization, to increase the skill of their farms. So within a relatively short amount of time, the productivity of European agriculture got a huge boost. So in terms of self-sufficiency and also of stabilizing farmers' incomes, it was a very successful policy. But you could say that the problems that we face today are a result of those successes, so that yesterday's solutions are today's problems. And I think the main challenges are the fact that the highly intensive agricultural system and the large scale of the agricultural system has resulted in all sorts of detrimental environmental and climate impacts that we're still struggling to solve today. And they mainly relate to greenhouse gas emissions, to rapid decline of biodiversity, to water, air pollution. I think these are some of the main challenges. And we're currently struggling to sort of reinvent agriculture in a way that is still productive, but that also stays within planetary boundaries. So that also provides ecosystem services and public goods to society at large beyond food production.
And if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, there was like a renewal of the CAP. Am I right? Did it change anything in like the main structure, or did it basically stay the same as it was in the very beginning?
Yeah, so the Common Agricultural Policy is being reformed every 7 to 8 years. And the newest reform of the CAP came into force last year. And there have been some adjustments. So there's some minor green conditions that have been added to the agricultural policy. But overall, the system that already existed, in which farmers get now paid for the amount of land, the hectares of land that they possess, that hasn't changed. And also the greening measures that have been proposed, they have received quite broad criticism from scientists and civil society for being insufficient given the challenges that the European food system faces. And as some commentators have even argued that this has amounted to greenwashing. So some would argue it is an incremental step towards a more sustainable direction, but it's a very, very small step. Apart from the Common Agricultural Policy, the current European Commission had proposed the Farm to Fork strategy, which was part of the Green Deal. And I was very hopeful when the Commission proposed this strategy, because it was the first ever attempt at EU level to develop something that we could call a European food policy. So which does not only cover agriculture, but also everything that follows: consumption, retailing, processing. And the Farm to Fork strategy was basically a legislative agenda. So it included a whole range of legislative proposals on reducing pesticides, on nutrition labeling, on reducing the amount of fertilizer that is being used. So that was very promising. And in the years that followed the adoption of the strategy in 2020, the Commission proposed all these new laws to the European Parliament and the Council. But now what we've seen, especially since the war in Ukraine erupted, is that all of these proposals have faced a lot of backlash, and that many of them have been watered down considerably, or even have been taken off the table, as has happened to the pesticides regulation. And I think that is a very worrying development if you at the same time see that the momentum of acting to really address the climate and biodiversity crisis is rapidly running out.
This was Jeroen Kandel. And now let's get into the topic of farmers' protests. In order to get a clear view on what is happening, last week I had a conversation with Natasha Foot.
And then at a certain point, kind of tipped, and I decided actually what I really wanted to do was journalism and writing articles and communicating about agriculture. And I decided I was missing the policy element. So I came to Brussels to find out what this CAP was that everyone was talking about.
Natasha is a freelance agri-food journalist based in Brussels, and she has been following the farmers' protests very closely since the beginning of the year.
So there's been a spate of farmers' protests all across the EU in the past couple of months since the beginning of the year. They've been dominating headlines, increasingly dominating the political agenda as well. The policymakers are really sitting up and taking notice. So this started in Germany at the beginning of the year, but then like dominoes, it kind of spread all across the EU, and it also worked its way all the way up to the home of the EU institutions. So that's in Brussels, where farmers have taken now to the streets in protest twice. So we had one a couple weeks ago and one just this week. So you asked about the reasons why farmers are protesting. Well, it's very complex. There's a multitude of issues that are driving farmers to the streets. I would say there are a few issues that are really cross-cutting and more fundamental. And that is really, it boils down to money, ultimately, and falling incomes. So falling incomes coupled with rising costs. Inequitable pricing structures of the agri-food chain and the farmers' kind of weak position in the negotiating chain there. We also have a lot of frustrations over a lack of level playing field when it comes to agricultural imports. So via trade, so farmers are frustrated that products cheaper, lower quality products may be produced with them. Lower production standards are being imported into the EU while the farmers are, you know, working really hard to be the most sustainable they can be in the EU. And of course, they're being undercut by that. Another key problem is, you know, a bureaucratic burden, administrative burden, and all the kind of paperwork the farmers have to wade through, whether that's to get subsidies or to prove what they're doing, etc. And a lot of that is also caught up in the some of the environmental measures, some of the extra environmental measures that have been asked of the farmers. But I don't think it's fair to say the protests are just a pushback against the the perceived escalating environmental measures. They're definitely part of the problem, but not the whole problem. You know, there are much deeper, more systemic concerns behind this discontent. And really a lack of, you know, when I'm speaking to the farmers on the street, you can hear that they just feel they're despondent. They don't feel like there's prospects for their sector. They don't feel like there's a viability for their kids to take the farm, for the future of farming. So really, you know, it's a bit of a melting pot, a pressure cooker of all these different issues that have been cooking for years now through various successive crises. You add them all together, you get this kind of perfect recipe for these frustrations you really see now from the farming community. But I would say if I had to boil it down to one kind of soundbite, it's they're really being able, they're asking to be able to live and have a fair wage from the work that they're doing. And that's really when you boil it down, speaking to all the different kinds of farmers, that's kind of the core of the issue. Because just to be clear, there are farmers on the streets that are all stripes, shapes and sizes. There's not one kind of farmer that's protesting. There's big, there's small, environmental, young, organic, conventional, and you know, there's some divergence on details, but a lot of the discontent runs deep and it's very cross-cutting, and there's common ground between these farmers groups, which is something I don't see often. I don't often see these farmers groups side by side all together in the streets. So
thank you. Yeah, actually, I also wanted to ask you about that, because in my mind, like, I see like these large scale farmers with big tractors protesting. But actually, as you said, it's not like only intensive or industrial farmers, but it's like really everyone that it's coming to the streets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were the small farmers associations there. There were the organic farmers associations. There were the young farmers associations. And there were, you know, what you would consider the conventional farmers, all side by side, all protesting. So that's what I mean by, you know, it's not one kind of farmer, which makes it very difficult to report and very difficult to explain, because you kind of have to break down, you know, all the different views and viewpoints. But when I spoke to the farmers there, I said, you know, well, how many protests are there? How many protests are there? Because there's the different stages, the different kinds of farmers. And their response was really, you know, this is one protest. We're fighting for all of the farming sector to be able to have a fair wage and to be able to live from the work that they do in a fair way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super important. And why do you think a lot of these protests are happening now? I mean, you mentioned that it all started in Germany, at least like this round or this wave of protests started there. But why? What happened?
Yeah. The trigger. Yeah, so there was discussions in Germany about the tax on the diesel that's used in tractors, basically. So currently this is like subsidized to some degree, and there's discussions about taking away those subsidies, and it's the same in France, actually, the same discussion. There's various trigger points and different, this is why it's also complicated, because not only do you have the different kinds of farmers, but you also have the different countries involved. Some of them are maybe driven by slightly different factors than others. Maybe it's about the agricultural, the tax on diesel. It can also be about various climate measures or environmental measures or unfair pricing. So there's kind of a melting point of all different issues. And you ask why it's happening now. I think, so as I said, it's been an incredibly difficult few years for farmers. So they've had to suffer through various different crises, through COVID, through Ukraine, which of course threw up all kinds of problems about trade and these issues that I'm talking about. There's also discussions on Mercosur, the Mercosur trade agreement. That's a key trigger point for a lot of the farmers. All of them at the protest mentioned this as a key issue for them. So, you know, that the discussions are ongoing now. So all of this kind of coming together. And of course, there's also the EU elections coming up in June. And so it's a fairly politically charged moment to make your message heard in Brussels. There are considerations of, you know, people are really, the election gun has been fired in Brussels. So we have President von der Leyen, who has announced she's going to go for us. The Commission President von der Leyen, she has announced that she will run for another round two. So the combination of the politics plus the years of hardship, really, that farmers have faced, I think have brought this together for this moment.
And Natasha, you mentioned the Mercosur agreement. So in that case, the problem is that with this agreement, the European Union would import products from abroad, especially from Latin America, if I remember mm-hmm. correctly, with like lower quality standards, and this would impact the market. Is it correct?
So it's difficult. This is difficult. Quality, not in terms of safety. There's very stringent checks. You know, you can't import food. This is something that's very important, and we have to make it very clear. You can't import food into the EU that's a lower safety, that could be a safety concern. And as you know, the food in the EU is subject to some of the most stringent food safety checks there are. The concerns really from farmers are about the production standards. So the fact that maybe in some of these countries you are permitted to use, let's say, chemical pesticides or various inputs into the system, or, you know, or they could be produced in a very unsustainable way. And that production, the way that it's produced, you can't really reflect in the trade standards, because maybe the food is perfectly the same safety standard, but it's been produced in a different way. So that's really what I mean by that. And then, of course, that can reflect in price. So if it's cheaper, then that also means the farmers are being undercut for the same kind of produce that they're growing here. And I think I remember seeing a sign at the farmers' protest that said something along the lines of "Stop importing things we grow here." You know, and I think that kind of sums up the feel from the farmers. I thought it was a nice, you know, way to explain what the farmers are feeling about that. Now, what they're asking for is this concept of mirror clauses, the idea that food imported have to be produced to the same standards as the food grown in the EU. That gets very complicated when you get into the WTO level. Technically, you know, you can't impose your production standards on other countries. So it's very delicate and it's very complicated, but this is a key ask for the farmers, especially in discussions around Mercosur, around meat imports, soy import, various different kinds of imports into the EU. But it's the same kind of discussion that we're having around other, you know, for example, with Ukraine. Again, that it's about the production standards and it importing into the EU market and the pressure that puts EU farmers under.
Are there already any repercussions on, for example, European policies since when the protest started?
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, policymakers definitely sat up and started taking notice, especially when France got involved. There was a lot of pressure there from the French Prime Minister and President, but also when obviously the protests came to Brussels. So the protests were timed in Brussels to coincide with a meeting of the heads of state. Of all the heads of state of all the EU countries that were meeting, the issue wasn't on their menu, but it actually found their way onto their menu for discussion. So there were a number of meetings on the sidelines of this summit with EU heads of state, with the farmers groups and representatives. And there's been a tangible reaction that you can see in terms of a policy response from the EU, and I also expect more. So already there was a partial temporary exemption to one of the environmental measures in the EU's farming subsidy program. So that's the Common Agricultural Policy. So basically, funding is linked to doing certain environmental measures. One of them is that the farmers leave their land, a percentage of their land, so 4% of their land, fallow. So you leave that for biodiversity. So there's a partial and temporary exemption to this. It doesn't mean the farmers can do whatever they want on that land, but it does mean they can plant certain crops that are also deemed to have certain environmental benefits. The Commission also introduced safeguard clauses in trade with Ukraine, so new safeguards on different agri-food products such as eggs, poultry, sugar. There was also a kind of stop, an emergency break that they've introduced. So if ever those amounts get too big, you know, that you can initiate, you can trigger a kind of emergency stop. The biggest thing, though, I think the most interesting thing, is that Commission President von der Leyen, on the backs of the meeting with the farmers on the sideline of the protest, she promised this package to reduce administrative burden on farmers. Now, this was discussed in a meeting with EU agriculture ministers just this week. Lots of discussions about this. There were lots of proposals from the Commission side. You know, they proposed basically a loosening on more of these environmental measures that I've already spoken about, these so-called GIACs, the Good Agriculture and Environmental Conditions. So currently they're mandatory. There are discussions about potentially making them voluntary or maybe having more derogations on more of the environmental measures. Proposal to reduce on-farm checks. There's also proposals for a kind of get out of jail free card for farmers, where if there's a real crisis that they can't control, then they won't be penalised. They will still be able to receive their subsidies if they're not able to fulfil all of the requirements. But more interesting is that there's also work on further actions to try and improve the position of farmers in the food chain and protect them against unfair trading practices. And actually, this has all ended up in a potential reopening of the CAP. So this Common Agricultural Policy reform came into play last January, and already there are discussions on potentially reopening the CAP, like I say, to maybe make these environmental measures voluntary, but also looking at some more profound changes to the Common Agricultural Policy. And that could be on the table. It's difficult to say in terms of timeline. It's a very complicated moment with the change in the Commission, the EU elections, etc. But at this meeting of EU agriculture ministers, the EU agricultural commissioner said that this could happen in this mandate, so within weeks or months.
Okay, so before the elections.
Before. Now, whether that is actually possible or feasible as a timeline, it's a little bit unclear for now, because, you know, any more profound changes to the CAP, opening up of the acts of the CAP, you would need to get both lawmakers on board, so the Parliament and also the Council. So in terms of how realistic that is, I'm not sure, but it's definitely under consideration. The Commission is definitely looking at a potential reopening of this policy to make some bigger, more profound changes.
This was Natasha Foot. And now let's move to the south of France, where we can listen to the witness of a young farmer, Sébastien Mira. Sébastien is part of the network of Slow Food Pays Catalan.
In my studies, where I did research in academics, I learned that agriculture is facing many environmental problems and also climate change. So we have to start a new way of agriculture in order to face those problems. And in my opinion, the conventional way of farming today is not able to solve all those problems, whereas other alternative farming practices and systems can face it.
And can you tell us what's the name of the farm and what are you growing there?
So the farm is called Terra del Vieux, which means the earth from the living, or living earth. In Catalan, so it's the region between Barcelona and Perpignan. And we grow many kinds of vegetables, so maybe 80 varieties, for a production of about 50 tons per year. We are three on the farm to work on the farm full-time. And we sell the products to local consumers or citizens that get each week the vegetables we produce. For the moment, I'm new on the farm and I don't get a salary. So that's why we need to produce on more land. But that's the next step.
Sébastien, can you tell me something about the challenges that you are facing as a young farmer?
So be a young farmer in this, I would say, alternative way of producing in agriculture can be difficult. First, to access the land, because now we see that there are less and less farmers in France, and the farmers who get retired, other farms already existing get the land from those farms that are left. So it's difficult to get the access because as a young farmer, which knows not that much about agriculture, such as me, it's difficult to be considered against those farms that get bigger and bigger, that produce always more, that know people. And of course, the land is very expensive in some parts of France, especially in south of France. So getting the money to afford it is also a problem. We have subsidies from the state, but it's clearly not sufficient. We need more farmers if we want to achieve sustainable goals and social goals. And in the moment, the state goes not in that way. So it promotes always the bigger farms. They want bigger farms. They want companies to buy the land and to own it in order to produce always more and not only produce for the food sovereignty of the state, but also to export, because we are on a global market and we need to export to be competitive, and to be competitive we need to produce at lower cost. As a farmer itself, not young, not old, all farmers, we all face climate change, and that's maybe the biggest issue we face, and we will face even more in the coming years, because climate change increases all the other issues that farmers face every day on the farm, like pest diseases, biodiversity losses, for example, for pollination services, for regulation services, but also climatic events, so rain events, heavy rain events, flooding, but also dry periods or hailstorms. That can be very, very stressful for farmers.
Another struggle that Sebastian mentions is that selling directly to customers is not always possible for farmers, because it's an extra job, which requires a lot of time and attention. On the other hand, consumers don't often come towards the local farmers to support them and buy directly products from them, but they find it easier to simply buy from supermarkets.
These are the farms, farmers that sell to the big companies, to distributors, supermarkets, but also to industrials which transforms their products. They buy the products at a price that is very low, and sometimes at a price that is under the cost of production. So that's also a problem.
And Sebastian, may I ask you, also, what's your opinion about the farmers' protests that have been happening in the past months all over Europe and also in France?
So maybe more in France, because I don't really know all the other cases in Europe. All those farmers, what they have together, because there are many, many differences between those farmers, but all what they have together is that they cannot do it anymore, like this system, which destroys them. Maybe it's a hard word, but I think it's that kind of feeling they have. And what I think of this protest is, and what I hoped it would have done, is that it would have asked to the society, to the all the citizens, the people from a country, what kind of agriculture do we want? Do we want an agriculture where there are less and less farms, less and less farmers, where environmental goals are reduced, where social and economics are always directed to make profit? Or do we want a system, an agricultural system, where we promote biodiversity, where we promote reduction of pesticides, of other kind of inputs, such as fertilizers? Do we want farmers that produce and feed locally, or do we want to export always more to a lower cost? So I hope that those protests would have raised that question. Unfortunately, we saw in France that nothing will change for the moment. What farmers get from the state is only that they could reduce environmental achievements, because they want always to spray more pesticides and use always more fertilizers to produce lot of production, but at what cost? All the negative externalities of this kind of agriculture, we know that we have to stop it. Because that's what it is. It's agriculture against nature. And science shows us that today we have to find nature-based solutions to face all the issues, climate change, biodiversity loss, carbon sequestration. Those challenges, they have to be considered with nature and not against nature. When we think about that, we have to find who benefits this. And people who benefit this reduction of environmental norms and of all kind of stuff, it's the big farms, which are not farms anymore. They are companies who export products, who produce at lower cost on very big farms. And it's not like agriculture anymore. It's only farmers to make profit, not to feed people. It's to make profit at any cost. So maybe we have to promote farmers to get to the transition and not help farmers to have big production, high level of hectares on the farms. That's the CAP. CAP today, the subsidies from CAP goes for 80% to the land area and not to the activity, not to the agroecology. To the agroecology, 80% goes to the land. So the more land you have, the more subsidies you get.
You have listened to Sébastien Mira. Before ending this episode, here is a quick summary of what we have learned. The farmers' protests across Europe are the result of decades during which politics has neglected agriculture and the living and working conditions of those who produce food, especially in rural areas. Today, a handful of financial groups and multinationals control much of the industrial food production. Our food system does not protect its foundations, the land, and those who work it, but instead suppresses the most virtuous and small-scale farmers. And so the discontent has exploded, directed at the wrong target, the ecological transition and measures put in place to protect the environment. I finally would like to remind you that in June this year, the European Parliament elections will take place. That's your chance to take concrete action and vote for representatives who care about a more sustainable food system. Finally, I invite you to support your local farmers and buy as much as possible products directly from them. If you liked this podcast, please share it with your network and join our Telegram group for feedback and questions. This is Valentina Gritti and you have listened to Slow Food, the podcast. Ciao!